my customers get super excited when we talk about how we can improve their farm.
The Growing the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Dan Eberhardt.
Jocelyn?
Yes, hello.
How are you doing there today?
So good, yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of snow today, but getting pretty excited for this busy spring.
Awesome. So I'm looking at your Twitter right now, and it's an interesting thing that you wrote. You're a lover of soil. You're a master of science. You have a degree in agriculture. You're a mom, farm woman, independent agronomy consultant with Western Ag, Sask Soil President, Sask Wheat Director, and your hashtag is Know Your Soil.
Yes.
So who is Jocelyn Velastuk?
All of the above. I feel like, I'm someone who's juggling it all, but I said to my husband the other day, it's sometimes it all comes at once, and all of these different things I'm involved in and all my passions. But I said, I'm juggling a lot of balls, but at least I'm the one who puts those balls in the air. I feel like, I want to do all this. These are things that I really am passionate about and want to influence for the egg industry. So it's good times. I mean, it's a lot sometimes, but sometimes I just decide to take a day with my family. So it's really nice to have the ability to decide.
What is it that gets you super excited about getting out of bed every morning?
In the morning we have family time. Like, that is just the best. So that gets me to bed. The kids are our alarm clock. I rarely ever set an alarm clock anymore. And so that's what gets me out of bed first thing. And then, it depends on the day, what kind of meetings there are, or with Western Ag, if there's something going on there, if I need to keep on top of things. With the farm, there's, something happening different every single day. And it's something that we kind of have to really adapt as we go to. So every single day is different, and there's a lot of beauty in that.
So you start out your day with your family. That's amazing. But do you have any sort of a morning ritual for getting yourself ready to go and take over the world?
Well, we wake up fairly early. So our routine is my husband makes breakfast. We get the kids going. Usually I'm cleaning the house in the morning because I'm not a nighttime cleaner. We have coffee and tea, and we make sure that we take the time to do that. That's one of the only times we sit down and as a family and really kind of my husband and I have our conversations at that time. We're a little bit more clear in our heads. And I mean, my husband and I are in business together too. So we have a lot of, farm conversations, and, I keep him up to date on all the boards that I'm in, and he's really interested in, what's happening with the egg industry. What have I learned that might influence some of our decisions that we're making on our farm? And then we kind of learn how to juggle the family together too at that point. What are we going to do with the kids if mom's gone, or things like that. So, and it's just our connecting time. So that's our routine. And I feel like I need that time in the mornings, and having an at-home, a couple at-home businesses means that I can do that.
Cool. Can you tell us a little bit more about your family unit there?
Yeah, I have a 3 and 5 year old. Luke, my little boy, is 3, and then Brooke is 5. She just started kindergarten this year, so things are evolving again in our family, because as kids go to school, there's a little bit more time for mom to do things. I've spent a lot of time with the kids at home, so I've tried to work my business and the farm and whatever else around being with the kids as much as I can. That being said, I'm very thankful for daycare. Even now, not being able to send my kids to daycare or even to grandma's house is has been a lot of fun.
You have roots in the farm. You come from the farm, or did you get involved with the farm because your husband's family farmer? What's the story there?
Well, I'm an import into Broadview, but I grew up on a farm by Wishart, Wynyard area. And we were mostly a grain farm, but we had some 4-H cattle and a lot of horses. And, you know, we grew up learning that we're all in this together. We all have to pull into this. I know my parents say, and my husband's parents say, you know, we didn't make any money off the farm for 25 years. And, you know, we didn't really know at the time. We thought everything was great. You know, we knew we had to work hard at seeding and harvest, and we did our chores, and it was a really great way to grow up. But my parents sold the farm when I was around 20 years old. And they did it because they mentally just couldn't do the stress anymore, didn't want to do the stress anymore. So coming into a farm, I kind of had that in mind, you know, and when my husband and I were talking about getting into the farm full force, that, you know, he was welding and I had a career in environmental consulting and worked out of Regina, actually. And, you know, we had the conversation. I said, you know, this is going to be stressful. We know farming is very stressful. You know, how are we going to handle this? And you know, one thing that was really important to me and to my husband as well. My husband's name is Jesse, by the way. And you know, Jesse said, you know, should we do this? Like, and I knew that he couldn't not do it. And he needed both of us full on. And I said to him, if we're gonna do this, I want to do it together, side by side. I said, I know I'm not a very good person to be in the backgrounds on the sidelines. I said, I'll support when needed and everything. But I said, you know, I'm used to being in there, you know, project managing and you know, changing some practices and getting into the science of it and, you know, the business side of it even. And wanting to be really successful. And I said, you know, you're a farmer, I'm a farmer for doing this. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So, so there we are, you know, 6 years ago now, we just had a new baby and we were, we both decided to quit our jobs and, figure it out.
I experienced the same thing with my father's generation. There wasn't a lot of expectation that one would get wealthy or have a lot of cash from farming. It was more or less a break-even opportunity. And what is your guys' expectations as a team now in business on the farm financially?
Well, we're going through succession planning. And we're a farm team, the four of us. My father-in-law, Alex, my mother-in-law, Debbie, my husband Jesse and I. So the four of us are in our corporation together. And so we're a farm team. And the expectation is different from everyone, I guess. From my husband and I, we have an expectation that we want to grow, we want to make money every year, and we want to manage our risks so that we're not so stressed out that we're not enjoying it. That's our goals. And I'm not really sure exactly what their goals are. I mean, succession planning is always challenging, getting everyone's goals. But right now, they really seem to enjoy working with us. And they keep saying, you know, I just want to slow down. I just want to not have to work so hard. And my father-in-law right now, like he works like a 20-year-old. He's amazing. Like he's 62 and he's just, he's going hard and he's in with the cows and everything. And I think he wants to, he's not sure what it looks like to slow down. But he knows that he wants to one day. So, you know, the succession plan is constantly evolving as everyone kind of figures out what they want to do. And like my mother and father-in-law are very fit people, and they got great energy, and they've been really open to learning and innovating and growing. So I'm very thankful to be working with them.
So how is it that you guys facilitate these conversations about succession? Do you have Elaine Fraser over for tea now and then, or what's going on there?
No, we actually started off, and I was really wanting to have a succession planning consultant, but those are really difficult to find. I'm hoping there's more and more of them. And we ended up kind of going the route of trying to figure out an accountant when we decided to farm together. And we met with a few different accountants, and we ended up going with the one we shouldn't have went with. I'm not going to name any names because we didn't get the right advice for our farm. But I remember when we were in a meeting with one accountant that they were pitching their way of doing succession planning. And this was all very new to my father and mother-in-law and us too, you know, how to do it. Because there's a bunch of different ways to kind of transfer business, right? And a lot of the things I know my father-in-law just didn't quite agree with too. But we had a 3-month-old baby, or she might have been 5 months old at that time when we were doing this. And I remember my father-in-law saying, you know, Jocelyn's gonna probably have an off-farm job, or he suggested that I would probably have an off-farm job. And I, at that time, I'm like, no, if I'm going to farm, I'm going to farm. But he said, you know, my mother-in-law, she's a nurse and she worked off farm. And he's like, that kept our family going. So at that point, we really kind of had to think about what we wanted to do and what my role was going to be. Cause if he's a farmer, I'm a farmer, you know, that was what my thinking was. But my role is also to have the kids. So we really kind of had to figure out what that was going to look like for our family. And along came an opportunity with Western A. And that to me was a very, very awesome deal because I was able to work when I needed to work. And my busy season being after harvest and before Christmas. And I was able to have an off-farm job that I can set my own hours and still be able to raise my kids, be involved in a farm, as well as have something that would help our farm be successful as well. So the opportunity with Western Ag has been just awesome.
What's number one and number two and number three here? Because you got a lot on the go.
There is no number one, two, or three.
Okay.
It depends on the day. Yeah. I know, like my husband, when we talk about this, in my mind, the farm is number one. But in his mind, for me, he wants to make sure that our family can eat and be clothed, and you know, that to him in his mind, that takes the stress off him. So he knows that we can put whatever back into the farm instead of taking money out of the farm. So he said, you know, make sure you take care of your, you know, Western Ag agronomy stuff, and then help with the farm. So that in his mind, but in my mind, I want our farm to be successful. I just, so it's always kind of a balancing act. It's a juggling game, and it depends on the day what I need to do and what needs to be done.
Pretty handy being an agronomist, though, on a farm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's become really important. And just having the network of farmers, too, and learning from different farmers has been so great.
Not only do you have a bit of a farming background, but you have a passion for the environment. Tell me a little bit about those roots and how that's playing out in your career in agronomy.
Yeah, well, I got my bachelor's degree in agriculture with a major in environmental and soil science. So I ended up starting my career in environmental consulting. And, I made my education go towards either agriculture or environment because I wasn't really sure where I'd end up. So with environmental consulting, what we did was we would go out and collect information on soil, plants, wildlife, even look at the different hydrology and we do different risk assessments for to get environmental permits and approvals. So there was we're basically the middlemen between environment and construction. And so it was a really interesting position to be in. And I find I did some project management as well when I was at Stantec. And so a lot of that and the way of thinking I've kind of brought into my career now.
How is it that you go about doing what you do? How do you tackle any given project? What's your process?
I have this just desire to understand the big picture. I want to take all the different pieces of data and the different puzzle pieces, and I want to put it together into a picture that, to me, all kind of everything is kind of working. If I'm missing something, I have this huge need to find out what that is and why I'm missing it and how it would fit in. So when I look at any project, anything in the agriculture industry, for example, there's certain things that keep on coming up, right? There's reoccurring themes and different issues and challenges that keep coming up. And I talk to a lot of farmers, and just having my background in soil science and environmental consulting and kind of understanding ecosystems and agriculture systems, there are certain things that are kind of glaring at me that are affecting the sustainability of agriculture. So even to make decisions on my own farm or to make recommendations to other farms, I feel like unless I understand the big picture, it's really difficult to make any or give any information to base decisions off of. So that's how I go about things. I gotta understand that big picture. And it seems like once I get to the big picture, I wanna go bigger because there's always that more overarching theme. And I think that's what keeps me going. That's what drives me is learning that bigger picture.
And what are the glaring things that are affecting the sustainability of agriculture currently?
Well, the things that keep coming up again and again, and this is agriculture around the world, is number one, the need for the family farm. It's required for sustainable agriculture, and that was stated by the World Farm Organization that I went to a talk to at the CFA meetings a few weeks ago. The other thing would be the focus on soil, and that's something that, of course, I've taken and ran with because it's something that I have such a huge passion for. And focusing on the soil, I mean, it's part of our agriculture ecosystem and our agriculture systems. But I think when we focus on the soil, when we learn more about how to manage our soil, there's a lot of good that happens from there. And I think a lot of our issues right now, such as weeds resistant to herbicides, maybe there's not as much diversity of our biology in our soil. We're spraying more fungicides and maybe more pesticides too in some areas. And there's these issues that keep coming up, and I'm just looking for a solution where all farmers could kind of, the whole industry can kind of move that way in order for every farm and every family farm to be more sustainable.
Drilling down to sustainability in the family farm, what do you think we can do to keep family farms rolling here?
Well, I think focus on farm profit. I mean, that's maybe a buzzword too, but I think it's really important to focus on the efficiency part. I mean, we're trying to put so many inputs, get so much outputs. The whole industry needs to kind of adjust in order to add more diversity to a system. And I know with our farm, we have to have diversity. It's we've built it into our whole farm system. So if we can't make money off of our, you know, 5 or 6 different crops, then we're not going to switch to a 2-crop system or less than that to make sure that we can make ends meet. We have to be able to use our diversity to make sure that we can maintain our profitability long term and build our soils. Our farm used to be organic, so it's been interesting watching our soils and watching our farm transform from 10 years ago. And, you know, I feel really lucky to be able to have seen that actually, because I've seen severe erosion on our soils, which are really knob and kettle, the little slopes, and just really highly eroded and just tilled the crap out of and so taking that soil and kind of bringing it back to life has been really, really neat to watch and neat to experiment with. And we've done different things like cover crops, and we've integrated cattle a little bit more. I don't know if you would call us regenerative ag or anything, because I still really like fertilizer, and I like I see the profitability from using fertilizer on our commodity crops, of course, in a balanced fertility way, using the Western egg technology. But I think that making sure that we are able to add diversity into our farming systems is really important. And I think sometimes it's just adding that complexity in. And I think, you know, we've kind of simplified farming a lot. Maybe not so much in Saskatchewan as even down south of the border, but I keep seeing it getting more and more simplified. And I think there's a lot of danger in that. I mean, our environment that we farm is not simple. It's a complex system. And I think it's so important to understand that system. Does every farmer need to understand their system perfectly? You know what? I think that's where consultants come in. You know, we can get data, and making sense of that data is where an agronomy consultant can come in and help coach along to figure out how can you make money from being more diverse.
Drill down on that a bit and tell us what that means to you, obviously, as a agronomy professional and farmer.
Yeah, well, when soil health started becoming popular as a buzzword, I got super excited. I was like, this is good. This is really good. I mean, buzzwords are buzzwords, but at the same time, I was really excited because it's bringing the focus back down to the land and how am I going to farm this land, and looking at the soil and, you know, maybe getting out of a tractor cab and putting a shovel in the soil and feeling your soil, or looking at different issues like compaction or not enough organic matter or erosion, and looking at these different issues and fixing them, and looking at different innovative ways of fixing a problem rather than just you know, thing. You need to spray this, because you can't spray something to fix everything. That's the reality of farming. And I think, you know, the soil health has really kind of brought to light that way of thinking. And a lot of farmers are really excited about learning more about their soil and can they improve their soil and make sure that they can maintain their crop health and their crop yields, and maybe eventually decrease their input costs, or at least increase their profits. So I think that's really important. And what people are really, farmers are really realizing that, you know, I mean, soil has always been there. It's always been important, but how are our kids and grandkids going to farm the same soil that we're farming right now?
You talk about coaching clients, and what fascinates me about agronomists, they say they're not salespeople. And yet you've got one of the hardest sales jobs on planet Earth. You have to have the confidence and you have to have the chops to sell yourself. You're not selling a product that if it doesn't work, it's essentially not on you. You're a young person selling your advice, and you're helping make huge decisions where hundreds of thousands of dollars are on the line. I mean, our family farm, $1.6 million in inputs a year. How do you have the courage to do that? I've always wondered.
Yeah, you know what? It scares the crap out of me all the time. I'm not going to lie. But I love it. And there has to be something that keeps driving you. And for me, what keeps driving me is my customers get super excited when we talk about how we can improve their farms, or, you know, they want to know kind of, you know, Jocelyn, what are you doing now on your farm? What crazy thing are you doing now on your farm? And let me know how it works. And hey, maybe should we try this on my farm? And hey, I've heard of this. Hey, is this maybe something innovative that would work in my farm? And we have the discussions around that. And that's what gets farmers excited. And I think a lot of times I even know as a farmer myself, it's really hard if you don't have someone to bounce ideas off of as well, or if you hear so many different conflicting pieces of information and you don't know what's right, or you don't know kind of what has some good science behind it. I think that's where the conversations are really important. And a lot of what's going on, especially like in the soil itself, like I have a master's degree in soil, and I've looked at soil for 15 years, and I don't know the first thing about, or you know, a lot of times I don't know everything about the soil. So when we have complex conversations, for example, if something comes up with potassium and they have low potassium in their soils, there's a lot of conversation to be had around that rather than just looking at that piece of data and the different nutrients interact. And there's just so much more conversation to be had around it. And I think farmers are really empowered when they feel like they know more, and when they feel like they have the right information to make the decision. And when they're with someone that they trust, then that is just so awesome. And that's what drives me. I know when I started off, I started with Western Ag as an employee. I just, you know, did not have the guts at that point to go into my own business, because you have the option of going commission with your own business, or as an employee with Western Ag. And I started off as an employee. After a couple of years, I realized that I needed to take the ownership, and I really wanted to make sure that my hours were my own. That was really important to work with my life. And so, but doing that meant I had to double my acres that year, and I had to really take ownership and have so much confidence while doing all this. And you know, it's really difficult. Every single year, I still need to give myself a pep talk. I need my husband to give me a pep talk. I need everyone else to say, hey, you can do this. Keep calling people. You know, you're good at what you do. You look at all the people you've helped and all the businesses that are successful and have grown because of you. And I think it's just really important to just keep your eye on the prize and really, really know that I'm making a difference. And that's why I'm doing what I do.
Great answer. Thanks for that.
And I love the people. The people.
Incredibly honest answer. Yeah, that's great. So walk me through the decision-making process then when you're working with a client.
So what we do is with a customer that's already with me, we would go and I would have the conversation about, okay, what is the past history of your different fields? And I could get an idea of kind of, okay, maybe they bought that 5 years ago, and before that, that was tilled or something. So I get kind of the field history from the farmer, and then I go out and I do the sampling. I choose the sample areas very carefully because we take one bulk sample per field. And so we're looking at the average of a field. And I really want to make sure that sample will represent the entire field. So I send that to the Western Ag Lab in Saskatoon. And then I get the results back through a modeling program, the Western Ag Cropcaster. And in the lab, the soil is analyzed using plant root stimulating probes. So the reason that I work with Western Ag is because of these plant root stimulating probes and the Cropcaster. I think the whole industry should be using this system. It is just far beyond any soil test out there. I mean, the regular soil test, has been around for a long time, and it really has not shown really great correlation with plant response. And so the Western Ag Cropcaster modeling program with the plant restimulating probes, where you get the soil supply rate, that's your available nutrient, it's a thing of beauty, because you can sit down and you can look at that Cropcaster, that modeling program with the farmer, and use it as a decision-making tool. So we can go through different risk scenarios. We can look at the economics of putting different fertilizer on, and it just really puts it into perspective for the farmer. And you know what? Maybe you need to bump up your fertilizer. Maybe that would make you that much extra money if you just spent an extra $10 an acre here. Or maybe you just need to change your blend a little bit and just balance out your nutrients for your land. And so we develop a plan from there. And it's the farmer making the decisions, but it's the conversations that happen that are just amazing in backing up those decisions. And it's right in front of us. We see the economics, we see the soil, and I love just starting with the soil. It's a great way to start with the decision-making process for the next year.
Well said. You know what I love about Western Ag? I love that little slider that makes your bin, go up and down.
Yeah. And the best part of it is my recommendation. I'm accountable to it. And I think there's not a lot in the egg industry right now that there's not a lot of accountability with a lot of things. And I think it really ticks off farmers. But I have to be accountable to my recommendations. So I go back to the farmer after they take their crop off. I say, okay, let's put your blend into the Cropcaster. What did you actually get for your yield? And we can go back. If it's off in any way, we have a conversation to figure out why. But a lot of times it is bang on. And, that means that, okay, if I'm telling them, okay, if you're not getting there, let's figure out why. And, maybe it is my mistake. The odd time it is, maybe I sampled an area wrong. But maybe it's the practices that we didn't even discuss. Maybe it's their speed of seeding. I mean, there's been a situation where I was like, why aren't they getting the yields? Then I realized that they were seeding really fast and they weren't getting the good seed bed. So there's things like that. Those conversations could make or break a farm. And, you know, I just find that it's so empowering to the farmer that they just get a piece of information and they can change something in their whole operation that maybe they wouldn't have known otherwise. So,
what are you seeing as trends with all this data and this feedback loop? What are you getting out of it as you go?
Well, the data isn't mine. We go over the data and then that's the farmers to use. And we can go back, we can look at different years of data because I go back to the same spots every year. But I think it's just really important to kind of realize that the fertility does change year after year, and you can build your fertility in different areas. If your yields are going down, then I think it's really important to ask the question as to why and what you can do different. And that's where I've been really interested in the regenerative ag practices, because a lot of them integrate something different in, like, how can I increase my organic matter to make my soil function better? Because what we're doing with the plant root stimulating probes is we're measuring the soil while it's functioning. So if we can get it functioning better, we can get the nutrients turning over better. So it's a really great way to kind of to figure out the different practices that can be done as well to improve your farm long term.
Walk me through your thinking on nutrients, biological processes in the soil, regenerative ag, mycorrhizae. We're hearing about this. Is this from planet Mars, or is this the next big thing, or where are we going in the rhizosphere here?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of research, and I think it's bits and pieces that maybe haven't been put together as well, and maybe more research that needs to be done on a systems approach. My perspective is kind of the middle. So there's the extremes, and then I think that whatever works for one farm won't work for the next. And so it's kind of trying to sifting through the information and, you know, soil biology. Yes, it's important. We know we need mineralization of organic matter. We know that we can, if we increase organic matter, then that could likely improve our risk management as well, because our soil has better water holding capacity, it has better nutrient holding capacity, and all these different things come into play. So I think that, I know on my farm, we use bits and pieces. Maybe we use something from organic farming, a practice from organic farming, like we seed a lot of sweet clover, underseed it. And that's something that they did with the organic farm too. And why not do it in this farm? We do a little bit of intercropping, and we still silage and fertilize our silage crop, but we put a diverse mix in for our silage so that we have a lot of root systems growing. And then we have a lot of plants growing once we take our silage off. And then just the different root systems with the rotation even can really make a difference to a cropping system. So my view is that it's going to be different for every farm, but I would like to go in the general direction of a more diverse cropping system and something that will work for each farm. But I think it's really important that we look into those different avenues too, because I think if we don't, we're going to be missing out on you know, farm profitability and sustainability long-term.
You talk about always looking at the big picture. How are you viewing the current big picture between farmers, food processors, and consumers?
We hope that you are enjoying this episode of the Growing the Future podcast. Please take the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, well, I think everyone is just really confused right now. Consumers are getting mixed messages. There's a lot of stuff flying around on Facebook that influences people's way of eating. And it's been really interesting through the whole COVID-19 process. People are buying differently, and they're buying foods like eggs, milk, beef, chicken, pork. And these are all food items that had been under high scrutiny before this all happened. And so it's kind of the basics to me. I know on our farm, we go through, in our household, we go through a lot of, you know, just milk, meat, eggs, and vegetables. And those are kind of the basics. And I think I'm wondering if this might change a little bit the view of our public on farmers. But I know that as millennials care about wellness, and millennials care about quality of life, right? So I think that's really important as farmers and as farm groups to really make sure that we are talking that language, and that we are making sure that our practices as well are reflecting what people want to eat. And maybe if people had a way of kind of understanding or tracking where their food comes from a bit better, maybe that would help. I don't know.
It's funny that at the end of the world, the most valuable commodity it's sold out is bread makers. Did you hear that?
Yes. Wow. That is pretty cool. Yeah. And I mean, that connects people to wheat directly. And that connects to farmers in the prairies, right? So that's a pretty cool thing.
I really hope there's a new respect that comes out of this. I think there's going to be an amazing amount of positive stuff that comes out of this tragedy that's unfolding. And it is an incredible amount of hardship for all kinds of people. But I'm extremely optimistic about the long-term ramifications. And one of the net positive results, I think, is hopefully that people will have a basic appreciation for some of the things that keep us alive. And if you've been busy vilifying oil and gas, for example, please keep in mind that there's so much fossil fuel in your average ventilator mask. It probably burns. You can probably set it on fire and it will burn because it's essentially an oil product. So I think keeping perspective or gaining perspective from these moments in history is valuable. And this is a major behavior changer. Can you imagine how much we've all instantly changed our behavior globally overnight, Jocelyn?
Yes. Even the amount of vehicles on the road, or not necessarily making that many trips to town or to shop just for fun, or, you know, it's we're all being more efficient, and just it's really kind of changed things for now. And I'm just curious as to what will happen after too. I think people will think differently after.
Do you think farmers are some of the least affected in this scenario? I mean, you guys are going out in the yard, and what's changed?
You know, I think there was so many things that affected farmers even before this. The rail lines not moving well, I think, was one of the biggest things that happened this past year. And so we were affected by that even before this even happened. I wonder if it's going to be more positive for farmers. I know, I think APAS did a recent survey of farmers, and farmers said, yeah, we'll be affected because we're not moving as much product. But my question is, in the long run, will farmers be, first of all, recognized as making good food, which, I mean, that's great. But also, everyone still needs to eat in the world, and they're going to want good quality food, such as, you know, the wheat, and that comes out of the Prairie provinces here. So it's something that I think farmers long term, I think we'll still be okay.
Who do you think of as your customer on the farm? Who are you focused on adding value for as your customer on the farm?
That's a good question. I've never thought of that, actually. Well, I have. Because we sell our wheat to on a world market. You know, we sell our flax on a world market. Our peas on a world market. I mean,
I get it. I just always am curious about this because we always think about who's your customer.
Yeah, no, that's a good question.
Who do you think of when you think of your end customer, and does it affect any decisions at the farm gate? And if not, how do we get there? Or does it matter?
Yeah, and I'm on Sask Wheat, and I'm on Sask Soil Conservation Association, which is very based in regenerative ag. One is more global, one is more local. And so I get both perspectives there. The regenerative, I think, would be speaking to more local Canadians, people who want to maybe meet the farmer who is taking care of the soil, who is putting carbon in the ground, so that, you know, they can sequester carbon and for to offset greenhouse gas emissions. And for Sask Wheat, we're looking at distributing the wheat, which is some of the best quality wheat in the world for making bread. We're distributing this around the world. And so it's two completely different perspectives and two consumers that may, I mean, all the consumers think very differently of, you know, the local wheat miller versus maybe a wheat miller in Japan or a wheat miller in the UK. So it's, everyone wants quality though. Everyone wants to make good bread in the end out of wheat, for example. And so I think as a farmer, I just want to make sure that I put out the safest, best product I can.
What factors into your buying decisions?
Good question. I'm a very technical person, very analytical, very scientific. So I make sure I get a lot of facts before I buy something.
Really? So, shocking.
So I don't know if everyone else does this, so maybe I'm the more extreme version of the mom shopper, but I'm also well informed, I like to think, when I'm out there shopping about where my food comes from. So I look at price, I look at Whole Foods, I look at your basics, your milk, your meats, and you know, making sure that I do a lot of local buying myself. My chickens all come from my neighbor. They have a grain farm and they have some chickens that they butcher. So we get all our chickens from her. We eat our own beef. We have our own eggs. We have chickens that lay eggs as well. And so I like knowing exactly where my food comes from as well, and understanding all the different industries and food industries is for me really important as a consumer as well. And I have a friend that's a dairy farmer, and you know, it's just really neat to know all these farmers, and I wish that everyone could know all the farmers that I do and know as much about where the food comes from, because people really do care about making good food. And I think that's a good message for farmers to put out there, because as a consumer, I know that. We have 350 cows right now and a couple hundred ready to go as grassers, so they'd be delicious, I'm sure.
This is very tempting. Only 2 hours to your place, I'm sure. I always thought at the end of the world, my first move would be to hunt cows because you walk right up to them. I mean, you don't need much of a...
That's too easy.
Cow tipping. Yeah, that would be my first source of protein is cattle. It's where I'd start as a hunter-gatherer in the new post-COVID era if things break down. But I'm sure civilization will hold. The edges of civilization will hold. I mean, how are you feeling about it?
I feel good. You know, I've been through my COVID crisis moments. I don't know. Is that a thing? I think that people get to that point.
I
think everyone's been to a different point. I actually, a few days ago, I had my first migraine. I think it's a COVID migraine, which, I mean, it's not just a headache. Your body does weird things like goes numb and whatnot. So that was my COVID crisis. And I feel like I'm on the up and up now. So it's you know, a mental challenge to get through things. I mean, but no stranger to that with farming. And I mean, we've had a tough start to calving as well. There's been quite a few calves that have died, and some eaten by coyotes. And you know, there's always something to deal with on the farm. And I think at some point I'm just like, okay, well, I have to stop making this a crisis all the time and kind of take it as we go and make a plan as best as we can, but be highly adaptable. And I think as farmers, we have to be so adaptable, and it is mentally taxing. And there's going to be times where, you know, you hit that mental crisis, and just I think that support system is really important. I know even when I started going into my own business, and I felt very, very alone. I mean, I'm here raising kids on my farm in the middle of nowhere. I'm used to having coworkers. I'm used to, you know, talking to people more daily. And a big thing that I felt that helped was I just made a list of support people. I just made a list. And whenever I feel like I'm like, holy crap, I'm doing this alone, I bring out my list and I think, okay, who would be the best to call right now? Or who would be the best to maybe throw a text and say, hey, how's it going? And that for me is, you know, is kind of how I've dealt with the mental health aspect of farming and whatnot.
I have an amazing concept regarding that very thing that I would love to share with you offline, because I can't give it away yet because I got to build it, and it's going to put me smack dab in the pantheons of the Hall of Fame of Silicon Valley, I guarantee it.
How many visions do you have?
Visions are for free, but execution is priceless.
Yeah, and I find you can have all the information in the world. You can know everything scientifically about something, but if you can't get that information across to as much people as you can in the best way possible, then what good is that information? And so I think there's a lot of power in being able to understand the science or understand a concept and be able to really relay that and connect with people on that so that people want to listen. So I think that there's a beauty in that. And I am just so interested in that. I'm so interested in how people make decisions. How do people gather information? Like, not everyone's like me where they're a fact finder, like you say. But so I meet so many different farmers, and as I build my business and want more customers, and as I want to connect better with my current customers, I have to figure out how to do that and how to get this information across, and what are their goals? What do they want to do with their farm? And it relates to their life. It relates to their family life. It relates to, you know, other decisions they make might not be because of a scientific fact. It might be because of what's best for their family. And kind of bringing that all together is really cool.
Well, I'm fascinated by the dynamics of people, and bringing a bunch of agronomists together in a tribe to move in the same direction is an exercise in in almost biology. If you imagined people were, you know, essentially life inside of a microscope, there's some similarities there. But I wanted to delve into a little bit of conversation about the nature of agronomy again. How many acres in your geography would you say, as a percentage wise, are being treated by a consultant right now, an agronomic consultant, as a percentage?
How many acres?
Well, no, as a percentage, like if you looked at your geography as 100% block, as a, on a percentage basis, how many acres are being treated by agronomy? 20%, 40%, 60%?
I want to say 10 to 20.
Isn't that something that only 1 in 10 farmers are, I guess maybe that's not a fair way to, but only 1 in 10 acres are being treated by a professional agronomist. Two in 10 acres.
Yeah, but I tell you, it's a harder sell to sell agronomy consulting because it's a service. It's not something tangible. It's not something that's a quick fix in someone's mind. And there's a lot of trust involved. And I think there's not a lot of third-party consultants out there. And I do think it's an area for huge growth, though. And this is what farmers want. They want good information. So there's huge potential. I mean, for someone like me with my business and growing, I think there's, you know, the sky's the limit how far I want to go with it. It's all on me basically. So it's definitely an area of growth for the egg industry.
And what are the challenges within an organization like that? What could be improved upon, or what do you see as maybe some stumbling blocks that would hold the growth of the group back?
Yeah, well, I think what's really important to support the agronomists is a lot of times people just need someone checking in and saying, hey, how's it going? I care about you. I care about your business. I want to know where you can use some help in your business growth, or hey, what went good? Hey, what didn't? And I just want to shout out to Danielle Wildfong, because when she was with Western Egg for a period of time, there is when I did my biggest business growth. And she was just an excellent coach in checking in, saying, hey, what went well? What didn't? What do you need? And, you know, what is your wins right now? And just to have, to keep going over that, because I know I get stuck in my brain and, you know, overthink things and things get a little bit negative. But if you have someone who's keeping things in perspective and kind of coaching you along and in the business growth and in confidence, even, it can be a really powerful thing. And I think, you know, the ironic thing is that's what I feel like I do in my job. And I just needed someone to do that for me in my business. So that's kind of an interesting part of it. But it's finding the people who kind of, you know, help lift you up and say, hey, you know, you got this, and keep going. And I know it's hard, but you're good at this and you make a difference. So
who are some of the people that have mentored you? And you were talking to me about a concept of co-mentorship. Who have you worked with on mentorship or co-mentoring, and what impact does that have?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like I've changed so many times in my career that I've had people come and go. There's certain people that will just talk to you or they'll see you, or they'll see you speak, or you'll work with, and they'll say, hey, I see something really special in you and I want to help you go for that. And, you know, a lot of times it's someone that maybe I'm helping as well. And so I've had a lot of co-mentorship happening in my career. There's also been, you know, like John Bennett, he's a past SSCA president, and I've been with him a lot with the carbon committee and creating carbon sequestration policy with SSCA. And so he was a president of SSCA like, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago. So he has this amazing history and he's done some really amazing things in his lifetime. And he's a farmer and, you know, so he's been a really great mentor with SSC side of things. And like Danielle came in, my sister, she's always a mentor to me and I'm a mentor to her. There's so many people, my father-in-law and mother-in-law, they're always mentoring. And my husband too. I mean, he's an amazing mentor. I think he's the best mentor and, he's not scared to just say, okay, he'll gather the information. He's not scared to just do it. And you know, he kind of helps coach me as well in what I do. So, yeah.
And I love that you're giving back. You're involved in a whole bunch of boards. Tell me why you're doing that and what value that provides.
Yeah, I think going on boards happened by accident. You know, right now I'm involved with 5 different boards. So I started with the SSCA board and I don't know what I was thinking, but I knew I needed more information. I wanted to be part of the bigger picture, you know, kind of like I usually think. And so I had called Jeff Shano up. I knew he was on the SSCA board and I said, you know, do you think this is something that I could be involved in? He said, yeah, he got me in. And I joined when I was really pregnant at the time. I didn't even think. I was just like, okay, well, this is something I'm involved in and you know, career and life doesn't stop, even though, you know, making babies. And so my first meeting, I was, you know, 7 months pregnant. So I had a big old belly out there and I just found it really interesting. And I talked to one of the fellows after and he said, I was wondering why you were joining while you're pregnant. And I think for me, maybe it's a good thing to show, you know, life doesn't stop, even though, and careers don't stop, even though, you know, we're farming and growing a family. And I really wanted to make sure that I kept myself in it, in the game kind of thing. So that started with SSCA and then I joined our daycare board because one of the ladies said, you know, we need more people and we want to make sure that we know what's going on with the board. And my kids joined the daycare last year. And the Egg Society, the Broadview Egg Society, definitely bring the age down a little bit on the group. But I really wanted to be involved with the egg community locally. And I just find that boards are a really good organized way to do that because I find setting a meeting time and kind of planning things to me makes sense. So it was a way that I could kind of understand how to have a way to give back to the community. The APAS mentorship program, one of my customers says, hey, you should do this. So I just applied and there it was, involved with APAS and what an amazing network. The APAS youth committee is just some really great people who are not afraid to get into these intense, in-depth conversations about anything and everything. And really want to make a difference in eggs. So I'm so glad that I joined the APAS mentorship program. And then my friend Hannah Conchu said, hey, Jocelyn, you should run for Sask Wheat. There's elections coming up. And I was like, oh, I had no idea. I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of busy. I don't know. And so she set me up to talk with a few different people and she said, haha, I got you. Look what I got you into. And so I was told it was a really difficult board to get on and a lot of people have tried to get on the board and haven't. So I said, okay, I'm going to do my best. And it was during a very busy time during soil sampling. So I used Twitter and I answered some phone calls of people who had questions I just engaged on Twitter, basically asked questions of farmers because my job on Task Wheat would be to listen to what farmers are saying and what issues they're bringing up, and to make sure that we keep our industry sustainable. So sure enough, I got into Task Wheat too, and here I am on a whole bunch of different boards. And all of it comes back to one vision though, and it helps me form the big picture.
Well, you're doing amazing. And I'm really glad that I met you, and I'm really looking forward to collaborating with you and seeing where your journey goes. And with the theme of the show, Growing the Future, where do you see yourself going next? What's the next big thing that you're dreaming of, or is it just expanding on everything that you have on your plate?
Well, I guess we'll see. I think life is a way of directing you where you need to go. I've been doing things that I never thought I would do, and but they're things that are such a good fit and things that'll challenge me. And I think that one of my big dreams is to talk around the world. And I don't know why. I don't know what I'm going to be talking about exactly, even, but it's in my brain, so I know it's going to happen. And I like to think that if we put all our energy into one thing, that or into a vision, that it'll happen. And I know that mine will. So I can't wait to find out how it's going to happen and how I'm going to get there. So it's pretty exciting though.
Jocelyn, it just happened. It just happened. You're going to be on a podcast on the internet going all around the world. And trust me, there's all kinds of people in Germany and, you know, Switzerland listening to this podcast right now. They're loving you internationally.
Awesome. Well, that is fantastic. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Dan.
Dreams come true just like that. But no, seriously, that would be amazing. And hopefully I'm in the audience sometime when you're speaking somewhere. We can only imagine. And how grateful will we be as a human race when we can fly somewhere and hear each other talk again?
Right. Yeah, you don't take that for granted anymore. It's something that, you know, that connection will be amazing to have again.
I really appreciate the time that you took. I'm really looking forward to continuing to get to know you better and work with you on different levels. And thanks for coming on the show, and all the best to you and your family this spring, and yeah. Stay safe out there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dan. You're a man with a vision, and I think it's a very exciting vision, and I can't wait to see where you go. So keep in touch for sure.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca. where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.